Good morning. I too was totally impressed with that announcement, Greg, on finances. Well done. That's I was thinking Peter Ox is here today, and he realized we were struggling talking about finances, and he really was going, "Come on, guys, you can do this." And anyway, thank you for that, Peter. And just thinking, you know, as we talk about being debt-free and how Gary Smith, who comes second service, was really just such a pioneer in us kind of taking that on. And just the way that we've kind of leaned into this over the years just makes me feel very grateful. A way to see God's provision, to feel his blessing, people who have faithfully just provided good leadership in our church. So I'm so thankful for that. I am so glad to be with you guys today. We've been gone for a few weeks, Patty and I. I mean, we were back last Sunday, but still sort of in that, getting used to the time change. We were in Spain for a few weeks walking on the Camino, and that's now, for me, it's the third time I've been able to arrive there in Santiago after this journey, and pilgrimage has just become so important to me, and I think has continued to be kind of a metaphor for church and how we do church, this idea of a journey that we're on, the idea of journeying with each other and what a gift that is to be on this road together. And something really special happened this last time that I thought I would share with you. How many of you have seen this movie, The Way? Has anybody seen that? Okay, it's a lovely movie about the Camino. But in the end, if you've watched that, they do this thing where they swing this incense burner. And it turns out that that's something that happens kind of only rarely. They do it, I think, 10 times a year, unless somebody's willing to pay for it well in advance for it to happen. And so every time we've been there, it hasn't swung. But this time it did. In fact, it was somebody from our church who said, "I'm going to make sure that happens." So we got to see that and observe it. It was just spectacular. This idea of this incense being such a symbol of God's presence filling this cathedral as, you know, these priests are down below swinging this on this enormous, rope pendulum that, and they initially swung it because the pilgrims would arrive and they all smelled so bad that they were like, "How do we flood this place with incense?" But anyway, they, at the start of it, just said, at the start of the service, "Oh, thank you to Little Church by the Sea for providing this." And I just thought, oh gosh, in this ancient cathedral, here is the name of our tiny little church, you know. And I just thought, it just was such a picture to me of this beautiful way for us to participate in something that's going on, something that's happening all around the world, this world work that God is doing, filling this space with his presence. And here we are, Little Church by the Sea, providing this space that hopefully this morning God will fill with his glory and that all of you will be able to experience. One of the greatest gifts being away was just how getting all your emails saying, "Philly did an awesome job on her message and Travis did a great job on his sermon." And anyway, I just felt so proud of those two, getting to listen to their talks as we've been going through Philippians, to hear them reflect on what God has been teaching them. But just seeing their gifts come to light, their hearts so transparent. Anyway, such a joy. The complaint I've gotten for being gone, and I heard it several times today as well, is you took the coffee guy. So Alan came on the Camino with us, and sorry about that. I was joking that we used to, anytime we got Laguna coffee in the past was always this, "Oh my gosh, this is wonderful," from our urn coffee that was so terrible. But then Alan came, changed the whole game, and now Laguna coffee is a disappointment. So anyway, you're where are my 5 different options of coffee to try in the morning? And so we are grateful for Alan, what a gift he gives to our church every Sunday in the beautiful coffee that he gets up at 4:30 and French presses all that. Isn't that incredible? A little facet of God's beauty there in coffee. Well, we're picking back up going through Philippians. And the passage that I'm sharing today has been kind of on the schedule. It happens to be the passage that Travis chose to share. And so there might be a little bit of redundancy in that, although I thought he did such a fantastic job with his message. And I hope to sort of just add on to that, not that it needed that. I think it was perfect, but it is such a vital passage, really reflecting on what is at the heart of Philippians, this idea of the emptying that takes place, that this is a part of our walk where we emulate Jesus, and Jesus shows us this idea of releasing his rights, of giving up rather than clutching tightly to, and that this posture of humility of heart is something modeled for us that we too get to respond to. And Travis, I think, rightly was talking about this idea of surrender and detachment being like the first movement that we make as Christians. But we are reminded as well that there is on the other side of this glory, that you're not giving up glory. It's that glory is attained in this very counterintuitive way of surrendering our hearts. But it could sound almost passive in the sense of like, just let it be, right? But what we are going to see in our text today is that Paul is saying, no, you are letting go of something, and then you are gripping tightly, gripping with everything you have to Christ. And so as we look at this, it just gives us a chance to, I think, reflect a bit on what we are gripping onto. It casts vision for us of just how we need to be pouring our whole attention, this sort of laser-focused attention, holding on to Christ. So here's our text for today. We're going to start in chapter 3, verses 4, and kind of the second half of 4 through verse 14. So you can follow along if you want to grab a Bible there in front of you, or the words will be up on the screen behind me. If anyone else thinks he has grounds for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised the eighth day of the nation of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew born of Hebrews regarding the law, a Pharisee regarding zeal, persecuting the church, regarding righteousness that is in the law, blameless. But everything that was gained to me I've considered to be loss because of Christ. More than that, I also consider everything to be loss in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. Because of him I have suffered the loss of all things and consider them as dung, so that I may gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own from the law, but one that is through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God based on faith. My goal is to know him in the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death, assuming that I will somehow reach the resurrection from among the dead. These are the verses I want to focus on today. Not that I have already reached the goal or am already perfect, but I make every effort to take hold of it because I also have been taken hold of by Christ Jesus. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind, reaching forward to what is ahead, I pursue as my goal the prize promised by God's heavenly call in Christ Jesus. The word of the Lord. Now, Paul begins this passage with his resume. He runs down this list, and this could sound almost braggadocious, right? He's going down this and just going, just so you guys know, I was the top of my class. Now, why does he do this? Why this almost sort of, it could sound arrogant in a way, but he's making a point. And if we remember back, he's just kind of vented this emotion towards these group of people that are adding to the grace of God this added requirement of circumcision. Remember this, that this is being preached in a church that is mostly Greek. And for the Greeks or the Gentiles, they were coming into this Jewish faith. And then the expectation was, at least by some, that as a result of it, their life would start to look more Jewish. And for Paul, he's saying, no, that it's all about Christ, but that whether you're a Gentile or you're a Jew, this is not a matter of changing, in a sense, this sort of outward behavior, but an inward an inward transformation. It's not about pursuing an outward set of rules, but an inward posture of the heart. Not even about a theological set of propositions that you approve of, although that matters, but a relationship with Christ, a knowing of Christ. And that when you add some added requirement to it, it starts delineating who is in and who is out, who really gets it and who doesn't, who's circumcised and who's not. And for Paul, he saw this as a critical place to kind of draw the line. It's like he places his flag there on this hill and goes, for this, like, this is everything. Grace alone, no added sense of additional responsibilities. And for Paul, in making his argument, he could kind of presuppose, like, well, it's kind of the guy, you know, if somebody says, you know what, I just don't think school is about grades, right? I don't believe in grades. Have you ever heard anybody say this, right? And you're like, what do you think that guy's GPA is? Probably like barely 2.0. I don't believe in grades. And you're like, of course you don't. Your grades are lousy. Isn't that convenient, right? But if somebody were to say, I don't believe in grades, but by the way, I have a 4.2, you're like, oh, okay, wait. He's not like lightly disregarding some system. This is somebody who has mastered that system. I've often said this quote by G.K. Chesterton. Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and left untried. Wow. Right? What's the point there? That sometimes people are going, I don't believe that Christianity works. And you might go, well, have you tried it? It takes work. It takes effort. You have to pour your heart into that thing. Before you criticize something, please tell me that you've actually tried. Paul, in a way, is pointing to the law that had preceded the gospel, and he's saying it's wanting. There's something missing. That this attainment of righteousness from the law, it's not enough. And we would go, well, have you tried it? And Paul's saying, oh, let me show you my resume. Do you follow? That as he's saying this, he is not lightly discarding something. Instead, he's saying, I gave my life to this thing, and it wasn't enough. And you're like, well, maybe you didn't have what it takes. And he goes, I was the top of my class. This way of building a case, there's actually a sort of rhetorical component to this, right? That he's not dismissing this by finding the weakness in it. He's saying, like, I gave this my whole heart. They call this, not that this is important, but they call this like a steel man strategy. You've heard of a straw man? A straw man is where you pull the weakest argument from somebody's case and you make it seem like that's the whole thing, right? This is, the straw man is a cheap shot. The steel man is going, I gave my life to this thing and it wasn't enough. This isn't a flaw. He's saying, I poured everything into it and it couldn't give me the righteousness that I long for. What is that righteousness? Well, it's this confidence. It's this sense of like deep clarity. It's this standing before God without guilt, without debt. That this is what our hearts long for, to be in this like loving relationship with God where all the junk has been removed, all the dross, all the impurities. That this righteousness, this purity of heart, we cannot attain it by doing more or achieving more or comparing ourselves to somebody else. It has to be done for us. That any self-pursuit of righteousness is futile. Doesn't stop us from trying, though, does it? And we're all chasing and chasing and chasing. I love this from Blaise Pascal. He's maybe my favorite philosopher, but Pascal was also a deeply devoted Christian. And he was saying that man has this like ache, this longing in him. And so he's chasing, he's hunting, and his illustration is like this person that's chasing after a rabbit. This is something that kind of at the time they would do for sport. And he would say the happiest we get is when we're right about to grab the rabbit, thinking this is the answer. That's the closest that man gets to a place of deep satisfaction. That if I just get this, everything will be fine. I think nowadays we might replace that rabbit with an Amazon box that we haven't opened yet. And we're like, this is it. Inside this box is the thing, right? And to just go, that's about as close as we get to a sense of true arrival. Pascal puts it like that. This, he says, the hare or the rabbit he is seeking would not save him from being bored. And that boredom is like this malaise, this despair. The chase, not the quarry, is what he seeks. And that most of man, if we think about it, is chasing and chasing and chasing after this thing. And Paul's saying, I chased harder than all of you. And I ran faster than all of you. And let me tell you, that pursuit is rubbish. It's dung. Travis mentioned last week that he even uses an expletive in the Greek. This is how strongly he feels about this. This achievement, this pursuit, this gain will never give us what it promises. It's always a sort of false summit. I think on the Camino we had a few of these hills where you're like steep climbing. You're thinking, I'm almost to the top. And you get there and you're like, I'm not. There's the top. They call this like a false summit, right? And this, anybody that's done any mountaineering or anything, you're like, there's the top. Oh, wait, no, it's a little bit higher. And I think life is like this for so many. Chasing after a summit that you realize is only just a little further away. Paul's saying, you can stop. You can let go of that pursuit. It will never give you what you think it's going to. It ultimately, in the end, is a race to nowhere. Paul has kind of described that with sort of two sides of the same, you know, continuum here. He says earlier in chapter 2, as he's talking to the church, he's saying, stop pursuing selfish ambition and vain conceit. Selfish ambition or vain conceit. And in this, both of these are comparative terms. They're ways of measuring ourselves, ways of understanding whether or not we're succeeding in life. Because we can never attain that summit, what we start doing is just noticing those around us and going, well, at least I'm better than that guy. And I don't like that guy because I'm not as good as that guy, right? This way, he's saying, this ambition and conceit, it's not just futile. It's damaging. It does a sort of violence to our heart. As we're trying to pursue this longing or this ache for things to be set right, what we do is measure ourselves compared to somebody else. And I don't think we even choose this. People are always doing this for us, aren't they? Always comparing us. And so we kind of get in this sort of defensive posture. But I think coupled with that, we start kind of measuring ourselves next to people. I do, at least. My gosh. I do it with one person in particular, and I'm not mentioning his name. But he's a good friend of mine. And I notice this because whenever something really good happens to him, I feel like a little bit bad about myself. If he gets a new car, I'm like, dang, I need a new car. Right? And it's because there's something, we're kind of close. We're like similar vocation, similar age, similar stage in life, you know? And so it gives you this sort of comparison to be like, how am I doing, right? And I like so deeply love this person. But it's interesting, if I'm honest, how it reveals a little something in my heart. Something I prefer not to admit. I loved this in Travis's message where he talked about how Philly did so well that he was like a little intimidated to get up and preach. And I don't know, I mean, since he's not here, talk about him behind his back, but there's just like a vulnerability when he said that, right? Like that little twinge of embarrassment there, which I don't know about you, but that just draws me in. I so appreciate that kind of vulnerability and authenticity. It invites us to see our own points of comparison where we're playing that game. Because the fruit of this sort of comparative thing is going to lead you to one of two places. It's either going to lead you into this pride of self-sufficiency, which is just bankrupt, but it causes you to sort of detach from your need from God. Or even maybe more damaging, on the other side, it leads you to this place of disdain or resentment. where you look at somebody through that lens of disapproval or criticism as a way of self-protecting yourself. Paul is saying, like, both of those things do harm, not only to our own hearts, but on our relationships, to our world. That this game isn't just futile, but harmful. And Paul is pushing us to let go of that, right? Jesus is modeling this emptying of that whole thing. He's just going, like, straight towards the cross, straight towards humility, straight towards that place of detachment and self-forgetfulness. And Paul's saying this is the way to glory, as it turns out, is this letting go of that thing, open-handedly releasing it, keeping this posture of surrender, flexibility. On the Camino, Andy Weigel was there, and he had this little Gumby on the back of his backpack, and it was like such a great reminder, right, of like, just stay loose. Just stay flexible. Things change on the journey of our lives, right? And to go, so often that clutching is this kind of softness, this yielding of our hearts. But what we do see in this kind of turn of these last few verses is Paul's going, but here's the one thing that I do. With every effort, I grip a hold of Christ. Instead of it just being this kind of passive response, he's saying, turn every bit of your energy towards this one thing. Hold on to Jesus. He says, not that I've already reached the goal or I'm already perfect. I make every effort to hold of it because I have been taken hold of by Christ. This taking hold, you know, one of my favorite things to do is rock climbing. So we know about grip strength, right? And in grip strength, when you're climbing, you're holding on to these little holds, right? And so there's all kinds of different ways to hold on them to kind of maximize your grip strength. In fact, like, if you're holding on to this tiny little edge, often what you'll do is, like, put your thumb over your fingers to, like, really be able to torque on that little hold. And as you're climbing, you're pinching, you're holding on to these things till you make your way to the top. But there's this everything you've got kind of thing that Paul's talking about that is like actually something more than that. I think of this, and maybe this will make sense, but I think as I climb, I have to make this decision on some of these. When I'm at a climb that's like right at my level, I'm like, am I going to make this or not, right? That there's this added bit where you just fight. You're like, this is right in my range. I might be able to get this, but I might fall. And what you do is you push every bit of what you've got. And the reason I say that is it's expensive. You just don't have much of that sort of gripping. In fact, they'll tell you that after you grip like that desperately, it takes over an hour for that energy to return. It's this all or nothing. If I climb that hard route on my first and I grip as tight as I can and fall, I'm wrecked for the rest of the time. I can still climb, but my grip strength doesn't come back. And I say that only because I go, that's what Paul's talking about here. He's not just going, hold on. He's not just going like, oh yeah, use good technique. He's going, hold on as if it's everything. Give every bit of those energy stores, all that glycogen in your muscles, like just spend it all. Hold on tight. This isn't some passive posture of the heart. He's saying, give this everything you have. This, to me, is such a great reminder for us that our pursuit of Christ is like central to our lives and how we live. This is what we're here to do. What do we do with this love of Christ? We grip it with everything we've got. And then we let go of the other. And if this sounds desperate or precarious, I mean, kind of you get this picture of like, don't let go of me, God. Don't let go of me. But what Paul is telling us to me is such a beautiful way of reframing that desperation and going, oh, no, 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 he's got you first. He's saying, I do everything I can to take hold of this because Christ has taken hold of me. Isn't that a beautiful picture? that we're not somehow reaching out going, God, where is your hand? It's like, boom, it's on us. Every single one of us, as it turns out. Jesus reaching down, gripping a hold of us. But he's saying, I need you to kind of, in the end, reciprocate. I need you to let go of that thing you're striving for and hold on to me. Now, I was trying to come up with like an illustration of this. And the best I could do was this old Indiana Jones movie. Do you remember? So you remember Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade? Sean Connery. How many of you have seen this? I'm like, I'm so old. Okay, all right, all right. So he chooses wisely, right? The chalice, the humble cup of Christ. And then, like what always happens, the whole room starts falling apart, right? Everything starts shaking. There's an earthquake. Sure enough, the grail rolls off the edge of the cliff. And in all of this, Elsa, I think her name's Elsa, slips off and Indiana Jones grabs her, right? And here she is dangling off the edge of this cliff. And Elsa sees the grail. And she's like, as she's hanging there, she's like, I can reach it. I can reach it. And she starts like, ugh. And he's going like, give me your other hand. Give me your other hand. She's like, no, no, no. I almost got it. I almost got it. And spoiler. She falls. And as she falls, Indy all of a sudden in this shaking finds himself now sliding off the cliff, and his dad grabs his hand. And sure enough, there's the grail, and he's like, oh, I can almost reach it. I can almost reach it. And I thought, to me, in so many ways, I feel like this is what Paul is saying. Is he saying, stop grasping for that thing. What is that thing that we're striving for? What is our grail that we're obsessing over? What is that thing that occupies our mind that we think is going to give us the answer that we're seeking after? I was thinking about this. Okay, I'm sorry. This is a goofy little sort of humble brag story, so forgive me for that. But like, I've been teaching this class and for George Fox, for their seminary, and I was like kind of weighing through. I knew I was coming to the end of it, and I thought, I think that was kind of a one-off. I loved it, but, you know, it took a chunk of time and a lot of grading papers. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to do that. And I met with the dean. She was at this event that I was at, and she's like, Jeff, I wanted to just tell you. She's like, I got an email this morning, and you were nominated for Teacher of the Year. And I called Patty, and I was like, I got nominated for Teacher of the Year. And Patty's like, you said you're going to teach again, didn't you? I was like, maybe. And I was thinking, it's so honest, right? But like going, wait, what did that give me? There's something in me that's like going, I want to know that I did a good job. I want to know that what I did mattered. But like some little thing that like speaks into a heart longing of like, I want to be seen as competent. I want to be, what if I was the teacher of the year? I didn't get it. But like, it's all rubbish, right? Who cares? I don't care. But you're like, what am I looking for in that thing? Like something I'm reaching for that I don't even realize I'm reaching for. Something that's going to tell me like some sort of righteousness of my own. Something that I can pride myself on. And often it lurks in really subtle ways. It's like lurking there in your Instagram algorithm, right? What am I looking for? I think, apparently, hip mobility and knee pain to go away. Aren't we all sick of those ads? Just me, right? Like, how many of you are in your 50s still trying to ride a shortboard and like, my hips don't work, right? That's my algorithm. That's like what Jeff's looking for, clearly, and yours is different. What occupies my heart? What occupies my mind? What am I really striving for? Oftentimes, that stuff's lurking beneath the surface. And what happens is maybe we've even taken hold of Christ's hand, and yet we find ourselves reaching for this other thing that takes our heart away, that pulls us in a different direction. I love how in this, when Sean Connery talks to Indy, as he's hanging there, he starts saying, Junior, Junior. And this voice of the Father speaking to his son. And that's what wakes him up. What am I striving for? This voice of his Father that reminds him, you can let go of this. This isn't the thing. It never has been the thing. I can't help but think, as I think of this gripping of the prodigal son story, which is maybe Jesus' best parable. I mean, I don't know. You might say the Samaritan. But gosh, the prodigal son. When you think about this gripping, here you've got this son in total failure. His life has fallen apart. And he's like rehearsing this speech of apology that he's going to give to his dad so that maybe he can come back and be a servant, so that at least he can eat something. And he doesn't even get the spiel out of his mouth, right? What he gets is gripped. That his father runs and embraces him. And to go, this is the gripping, right? This is what happens. This is the thing that has occurred. And yet we have this opportunity. How are we going to respond to that embrace? Are we going to yield? Are we going to keep striving for this other thing that's pulling us away? This pursuit of God, have you felt that? In some ways, it's the most basic thing to my faith. A handful of times where I feel like God has just gripped me. And often it is in that place of despair where I feel like things are helpless, where I feel like there's nothing I can do to fix this, where I feel in over my head or at the end of my rope. All of a sudden, there's God gripping me. And it's this reminder in so many ways that I'm seeing what's already been the case. That it's not like God all of a sudden decided to grip me. It's that I was so focused on other things or my own self-sufficiency, my ability to make something happen, that I couldn't even see God there. I'm sort of summarizing these scriptures. I have them in your notes. But there's a story of Jacob where he is in this place of just such desperation. We're told he lays his head down on this stone, and I forget who it was, maybe Tim Keller, somebody like that, said, why do you lay down on a stone? And the answer is, like, you have nothing else. You don't lay down on your cloak. You don't lay down on some little cushion. You lay down on a stone because you have nothing. And in there he has this dream. And there is angels descending and ascending. Jacob awakes and he says, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. That reminder for all of us today that you are in God's grip. That precedes our gripping back. That this is what Jesus has done. The question is, will we respond? There's an image of this that just I love, and I got to give Steve Hester credit, because I was talking about at our elder meeting, talking about the talk today, and he's like, it's like that crucifix that we saw. So another Camino reference, but we're in this little town of Spain, and we have this guide who's leading us, and her name's Anna, and isn't a Christian, and she like knows that we are, but she goes, oh, there's a crucifix you have to see. It's the one that's on your bulletin. And she's like, it's in this little church and it's locked up, but I know somebody with the key. So kind of this cool little moment for us to go in and see this Jesus. But if you can see it and you've got it there on your bulletin, you notice one of his hands is like come loose from the cross and he's reaching down. And I thought, Anna, not a Christian, sees this and goes, that's beautiful. This picture of what God does, this hand coming down and grabbing a hold, that this is the love of God, that we have been gripped by Christ, and that's what it looks like. God from the cross reaching down in humility and in love, in strength, gripping us with everything he's got. This is the picture. Christianity is not about earning salvation, but it requires effort that we grip on back to that hand. That's what Paul is saying. He's saying the Christian walk is so many distractions, so many temptations that come that try to pull us away. And he's going, one thing I do, I press on. That word pressing is really like pounding. In fact, the very word that he says he uses to press on is the word that he used earlier in this passage to talk about how in zeal he persecuted the church. That at one point Paul was persecuting, he was pressing, he was pounding the church. But now this is Paul pounding on himself, like to remove this false self that just wants to clutch after vanity, to let go and to release. But what we see here is that God is pounding back. And I think the image, once again, is not this violent picture. Immediately, I think of Jesus standing at the door of our heart, knocking. What does he desire? Intimacy. This is what Paul comes to again and again, to know Christ. Jesus is saying, I don't want to just pull you into heaven. I want to dine with you. I want to know you and for you to know me. And that for us, our life is about turning our whole focus into seeing this, noticing this, living our lives in such a way. This occupies our minds when we wake up. This should be what we're reflecting on when we go to sleep. To know Christ more deeply. To open up Scripture and feed off of those truths in such a way that is going to open our eyes to the reality that God is all around us. To serve and to forgive and to like extend grace as a way of reminding ourselves of the grace we've received and living in that place. Letting that be the fuel that ignites our hearts. Paul says, consider others more important than yourselves. We practice this as we come to church with each other. How do we serve each other? How do we care for each other? How do we see one another as more important than ourselves? This is the effort that Christianity takes. This is the part that is difficult, but worth it. Because the answer of Jesus is not wanting, it's sufficient. But it's we who have this opportunity to cling back. We have been held on to, but will we turn and take hold of that grip and grip it with everything we've got? I was thinking I would share this just little spiritual exercise with us that's called the examine. And it's something that's been done, I think Ignatius started it, you know, hundreds of years ago. But it's, sometimes we do these like highs and lows. Have you ever done that? Like we would do this with our kids. What was your high? What was your low? And it's just that, but in looking at your day. Where was I closest to God? Where was I furthest? How do we assess our lives through that lens each day, away at the end of the day and reflecting and going, how tomorrow can I draw closer? And what were the things that got in the way? Where did I experience the warmth of Christ? Where did I feel distant? How can I conform my life more and more to living in the reality that God is with us all around us, right there already holding on and then gripping back? Three questions for reflection, and then we're going to have one last song to sing together. Number one, these are simple today. What are you clinging to for worth or security? And, you know, be honest there, right? Like, I'm doing a pretty good job. And you're like, okay, really? What am I really longing for there? Where have I found some other thing that I'm striving for that might be taking me away from my gripping of Christ? Number two, where have you felt God's grip in your life? And honestly, these might be select moments, but they're important to realize. When I say that I've felt that from God, I think I've probably felt it like three times where I'm like, oh, I'm yours, like you have me. But what a helpful thing for us to think through and remember. And number three, what is one way that you can press on this week to know Christ more deeply? How can we lean into that work? How can we yield and surrender, letting go and clinging to what Christ has done?